Okay, we haven't learned together for a little while. The Yontif of Shavuos. So now finishing up the week of Sheva Brachos with Hashem. Shavuos the Chasana. I want first to say that there's a chayla, that there's someone who's sick by the name of Moshe Ben Sora who needs a refuah shleima. And this year is given the schus of his refuah. And whoever can say a kapitel tehillim would be most appreciated. Moshe Ben Sora. Also another chayla who's severely injured by the name of Yehoshua Bitzalel Ben Chana. Hashem should send him a refuah shleima b'sar shachal Yisrael. So let's talk about things that befit the end of Sheva Brachos. These parashiyas are the parashiyas of the Leviim. The light of Shevet Levi, the light of the Leviim, is shining very strongly in these parashiyas. And the Torah says to us this week, that Hashem said to Moshe and told him, "Kachas aLeviim itoich bnei Yisrael v'tiharto Yisrael." To take the Leviim and to purify them. To purify them, to prepare them. So the last 5 minutes we'll come back to that. The union of the Tahara, the purification of the Leviim. And how it's nogeya to us. But we first have to try to hold on to the last few moments of the light of Shavuos, of Kabbalah Satar. And I spoke about this past Shabbos, that there are three remarkable koiches, three iris, that are shining in the world. On Shavuos. Shavuos spoke about this Shabbos. Three areas that are on Shavuos. The light of Moshe Rabbeinu, Olav Shalom. Moshe Rabbeinu. And of David HaMelech. Moshe Rabbeinu, of course. Moshe Rabbeinu was makabel the Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu brought us the Torah. And therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu's light is mamish shine. And David HaMelech, the Yerushalmi says that David HaMelech passed away, that he was nifter, he died by Tzeres. He died on Shavuos. The yard site of David HaMelech is on Shavuos. And the yard site of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, of the Holy Baal Shem Tov. Now obviously, if these three tzaddikim share in common this day, this yontif that we just went through, that we're just completing, the yontif of Shavuos, then it must be that there's a common relationship that they all have with the Yontif of Shavuos, with Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah in Har Sinai. Although each one has a certain nekuda, a certain point of chiddush, as we'll see, there's something different with each one, with Moshe Rabbeinu and David HaMelech and the Baal Shem Tov, because each one was necessary in order to bring about the full revelation of the light of Shavuos. So let's begin. And at the end, to see how all of this relates to the koach of the Leviim. It's been so many years that the Jewish people have been in Galus. It's been so many years since we've been in Galus that to a large extent, we've forgotten what it means to have a malchus. What it means, malchus. Malchus, the kingdom of the Jewish people. What's sitting now in Israel is not even a good imposter. But the real malchus of the Jewish people is missing so much from our lives. Each one of these three tzaddikim, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, of course, and the Baal Shem Tov, reveal a unique aspect of malchus, of royalty, of Jewish royalty. Moshe Rabbeinu was a melech. Moshe Rabbeinu was a king. And there are many interesting discussions in the Achronim regarding that status of Moshe Rabbeinu. Mr. Rambam writes the halacha that Moshe Rabbeinu melech hayah. That Moshe Rabbeinu was a king. Obviously, there's something different about his kingdom, which we'll talk about. And Chazal learned it from the pasuk Vayehi Bishurin Melech, and the Melech is referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. Chazal said, so Moshe Rabbeinu was a king. He's the beginning of our royalty. He's the beginning of our malchus. David HaMelech, of course, would begin that unique and permanent malchus of the Jewish people, the malchus of Beis David, of the kingdom of David. As the Rambam also writes in Hilchos Melachim, Shekevin shenimshach David zocha bekesa malchus, that once David was anointed, he acquired the crown of malchus. Lo yulavonav azacharim ad olam, for him and for his male descendants till the end of time, till the one for whom we're waiting so many years. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh is the beginning of that malchus. The malchus of Torah HaChasidus, the malchus of the Baal Shem HaKadosh, which it's very well known that the Baal Shem Tov, in the only real, clearly authentic document that we have from him, the Baal Shem Tov had an Aliyas Neshama on Rosh Hashanah one year, where his soul ascended to the higher world, and in that place his soul met the soul of Mashiach Tzidkenu, of Mashiach. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh asked, Emosai Ka'osi Mar, when are you descending into this world? And part of the response, the main part of the response of the Mashiach was the Pasuk L'Chsheyafutza Ma'inosecha Chutza, when your wellsprings will go forth into the world. When the wellsprings of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. And very often, I've spoken about the teachings of Chassidus as being the beginning of that awakening, of that, a taste of that light of the end of time. The Torah of Baal Shem Tov is the Torah HaMashiach, the beginning of the taste of Torah HaMashiach, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So all three, Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, and the Baal Shem Tov brought into the world Jewish royalty in a different way. And obviously, that's deeply, deeply related and connected to Matan Torah, to what took place in Har Sinai with the giving of the Torah. In order to receive the Torah, in order for us to receive the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, Va'atem tiyuli mamleches koyhanim v'goy kodesh. And you will be mamleches koyhanim, a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. Mamleches koyhanim. That means, when Chazal tell us that when the Jewish people said Nasa v'nishma, how each one received crowns, one for Nasa, one for Nishma, we will do, we will hear, we want the Torah. When the Jewish people received the Torah, each and every Jew became a melech, an amalka, a king, a queen. Every single one of us since then is part of the Mamleches Kohanim. And the essential nakuda, the essential point of Malchus, of royalty, is the quality of hisnasus, of exaltedness, of exaltedness. That the melech is different. The king is different. And you know that this has caused the nations of the world a great deal of concern, that the Jewish people are different. And they've had to devise all types of theories and methods of destroying us in order to erase that distinction. The Malchus of Eroim Antonu Mikoloshen, that we are exalted. The Malchus of the king, as the Rambam writes about in Hilchos Malachim, the Halachus of Malchus, the laws of royalty that govern how the king is to be treated. He's to be treated different from the rest of the people. And his covet, his honor, and his glory have to be very, very fiercely protected. You can't see a king when he's getting a haircut and going to a bathhouse and so on. There are different halachas for Malchus Beis David and other kings. As the Pasuk says in the Novi, the Pasuk says in Yeshaya, Melech b'yofyo techazen o'inecho, that your eyes should behold the beauty and the splendor of the king. The king is different. Malchus, royalty, can't be described in words. But the Navi says, Melech b'yofyo, the beauty of the king. The beauty of the king can be experienced, can be seen, can't be clearly understood. But this which we know. The effect that Matan Torah, the effect that the giving of the Torah had upon the Jewish people, is that they became forever set apart from the world as B'nai Melachim, as B'nai Melachim, as Mamleches Kehanim, as kings, as queens, as royal people who are separate, distinct, and exalted. And the nature of Malchus is also, let's understand, that the nature of Malchus is also Melech Peretz Geder Vein Moiche Biyodo, which means that a king is to a large degree unrestricted. Of course, you all know that there are restrictions that are placed upon the king because of his immense power. But Melech Peretz Geder Vein Moiche Biyodo, that a king has the permission of the Torah to break fences and boundaries. The whole appearance of Mashiach in this world is with breaking fences and overcoming barriers. From the very beginning of the Mashiach's presence in the story of Lot and his daughters, and with Yehuda and Tamar and the birth of Peretz, Peretz means to shatter, to break. And Ruth and Boaz, and David and Bathsheba. Mashiach, royalty that breaks and shatters all the boundaries and constraints of this world. Because the nature of Malchus is that it's bilti mugbal. It's not mugbal. It's not contained within the normal limitations, with the normal restraints of the world. And the Jewish people at Har Sinai received the koich of Malchus, were filled with this power, with an energy that raised us above the entire universe, above all human beings, above all malachim, all angels, above all creation. And on a simple level, before we return to the three levels of Malchus, which we will in a minute, on a simple level, a Jew has to know that. A Jew has to know what Malchus is and to feel that sense of royalty. And I spoke about this once before, that you all remember there was a time in the life of Shlomo HaMelech when he wasn't quite king. He wasn't king. The circumstances are not important to discuss right now, but there was an impostor, Hashmadai, and Shlomo HaMelech was thrown 400 parsoris, was thrown miles and miles away from the Malchus, and he was wandering through the world. And he said, "Ani Koheles Ha'isi Melech HaYisrael B'Yushalayim. I'm Koheles, I was once upon a time a king over the Jewish people in Yerushalayim." And Chazal tell us that Shlomo HaMelech was saying he would go from door to door and nobody believed who he was. He said, "Ani Koheles Ha'isi Melech HaYisrael B'Yushalayim. I'm Shlomo HaMelech," and everybody laughed, no one believed him. Ha'isi Melech, Chazal say that in the beginning, Shlomo HaMelech ruled over the higher world and the lower world. Subsequently, he ruled over the lower world. Then he lost that kingdom and he ruled over Eretz Yisrael. Then he ruled only over Yerushalayim. And at this point in his life, he ruled only over his stick and his cloak. Or those there are those that interpret gundo meaning his a kli, a vessel, which is a big nafkumen in the svarim. So we don't have time for that. So he said, "Ani koheles ha'isi melech ha'yisrael b'Yerushalayim. I was once ruling over the higher world and the lower world, over the entire universe. And now I'm a king over my shtekel, my stick, and my robe, or my container." But the Musa Svarim say that it's true that at that point in his life, the kingdom of Shlomo HaMelech had been greatly reduced. That's true. It was terribly diminished. The greatness of Shlomo HaMelech is that even when his malchus was diminished, he remained a melech. He's a melech, even if it's over his shtekel. He still had all the royal attributes and qualities of a king. On Hurdus, on Herod, Chazal bring the pasuk Eved ki yimleich. What happens when a slave becomes king? And although Herod became the wealthiest man in the world, and lived in a palace and was surrounded by gold and silver, Chazal say on him, Eved ki yimloch eb leipt an eved. He was a slave and he remained a slave. Because malchus is an inner quality. Royalty is within oneself. It's a preferential Lion King. I'm sure many of you saw Lion King. That's an inner quality, malchus. So Herod could be sitting on 25 thrones and ruling over the entire universe, but he doesn't possess the qualities of malchus. He doesn't have control of himself. He's an eved, he's a slave, he's a servant, he's a peasant. As per celebrities, movie stars and so on, and athletes, with all of their malchios, all of their kingdoms. But real malchus that the Jewish people received at Har Sinai, mamlechus kehana begay kodesh, means that even if everything is taken from you, even if you have nothing, but the quality of malchus, you rule over your shtekel, you rule over yourself. That can be seen how a person walks, how a person talks. Nowadays, Baruch Hashem, there are many, many people that are shomer mitzvahs here in America and so on in these neighborhoods. But real malchus you don't see as much as, I mean, it's not like I'm such an old timer, but real malchus, it's not the same. Royalty. To be in the presence of a tzaddik, malchus. And even how simple Jews carry themselves. You see, for a girl, let's say, it's not enough to wear the right length skirt. It's not enough to say mamish and davka and to have the right credentials. Malchus, you have it or you don't have it. And it goes with every step that you take, like Ruth, when she walked and when she bent down, it was different. For boys, malchus is not defined by the size of one's yarmulke and what position it is on his head, which, as you know, is a very, very deep inyan nowadays. And whether the tzitzis are the thinnest tzitzis in the world and hang down the furthest. And whether he throws around words like gewaldig and geschmack. Malchus is an inner quality of how you look at things, of how you talk. It's a certain posture. That Malchus we received, each and every Jew received, that every Jewish person is a balabos over himself or herself. Every Jewish person can rule over himself or herself, desires and so on. That the body is not in control, the mind and the heart of a Jew are in control. And the Malchus of every Jew means that you have the koach to rise above the restraints of the natural world, of this world. That no one can tell you that you can't. Says you can't. Melech parents gather, and Melech biyado, it's a halachim ufereshes. That a king is able to break down boundaries. You can't get in the way of a king. You get in the way of a king, you get killed. Melech parents gather, and Melech biyado. Now let's understand the three aspects of Malchus. But here we're going to begin with the three aspects of Kabbalah Sotir. Because there were three levels of revelation that took place in Har Sinai that correspond to the three Malchios, the three aspects of royalty that were revealed through Moshe Rabbeinu, David HaMelech, and the Baal Shem Tov. The first aspect of the Gilui, of the revelation that took place in Har Sinai, was summed up in the Pasuk, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai. That Hashem descended upon the mountain. Of course, that doesn't mean anything physical. But it means, to the best of our understanding, as simple people, it means that the most astounding event that ever occurred in the history of this world was the fact that Elokus, godliness, mamish, was revealed in Har Sinai. The godliness, Vayered Hashem al Har Sinai, a Gila Elokus, a revelation of godliness, which we spoke about a few weeks ago, that is described in Chazal, that Hashem tore open the heavens. Every single Jew was able to see and to understand after Heres Ladas, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, that we saw and we understood with absolute clarity. So the first aspect of revelation that took place in Har Sinai was the descent of godliness into this world in an open and revealed way. But that's not forever, as you know. And that blinding revelation of Hashem retreated. And that brings us to the second level of revelation. The second level of Gilui that took place, or the second Hischadshus, Chiddush, that took place by Har Sinai. There's a rule in the world of holiness. There's a rule. And this rule, unfortunately, applies in the world of impurity, according to the principle of Zelum Azeh Asor Elokim, that the forces of holiness and the force of anti-holiness are at war with each other. And the rule is as follows, that when something once happened that was holy in a certain place, when something happened that was great and that was holy, that even after the conclusion of that moment of holiness, and even after the holiness has officially retreated, there remains a residue, a roishim, a reshimu. That's how Hashem made the world. There remains a light in the absence of Yaakov Avinu, Vayetze Yaakov Be'er Sheva. So when Yaakov left Be'er Sheva was reeling in pain. You feel the residue, you feel a little bit, but the ziv, the splendor, the hoy, the hadar, the glory is gone. But there remains a residue of holiness. And Chalila in the world of impurity is the same thing. As much as New York City will try to clean up Times Square, it's not going to be a place that's fit for a mikveh of Ismedrash. Too much damage was done. And there are certain places that as much damage as was done, for instance in the city of Shechem or in Sdom, even though there is terrible damage done there, but the roshim of Kedusha of Holiness is so astounding that they can be fixed. So the second level of revelation is as follows. Even after the Shechina, the Divine Presence, retreated from its state of absolute revelation, the world was uplifted and refined. Something changed in the world. That from that time on it would be easier for godliness to be revealed. You all know that every one of us studied the Torah with an angel before we were born, and then we were caused to forget it, and everybody knows that the point is that it's easier for us to get it back. Once something was there and it was taken, there's an inner cry within the self that is yearning to have it back. It's calling for its return. So the second level of revelation was that even after the return of the Shechina, the Divine Presence, there remains within the Jewish people this longing, this residue of Kedusha that creates within us this uneasiness and a need to find our way back. So that's the second level of revelation. And the third, the ultimate tachlis of the giving of Torah, the ultimate goal, the purpose of Hashem's descent into this world, was to bring about a mitzvah, a reality of Nisavak Rishbaruch Yesli Yisbaruch Lir B'Sachtoinim, to bring about a unification, an integration, a fusion of the higher and the lower world. That means that the tachlis of creation is that the Jewish people, because we receive the Torah, that the Jewish people have the koach, have the power, have the ability to reveal God's presence even in a place where you can't see, never mind you can't see the slightest trace of His revealed presence, but you can't find even the slightest residue of godliness. The tachlis of creation is that every single stone and blade of grass, that every single molecule of darkness will be illuminated with Hashem's presence. And the result of Har Sinai was such that the Jewish people have a koach ever since that day to bring godliness into a place of absolute and total darkness, a place where one doesn't sense any feelings of holiness. And yet, with a Jewish person, with Torah and mitzvahs and tefillah and so on, with davening and learning, performing mitzvahs, ma'asim tovim and good deeds, that the Jewish people have the ability to refine, to contaminate the world with our royalty, to uplift the world. As the Ramchal says in the beginning of Mesillas Yesharim, that when a Jewish person lifts himself up, when a Jewish person ennobles himself, then he lifts the whole world, mamash. These three levels of revelation, now, listen carefully. These three levels of revelation, again, of absolute clarity. Vayered Hashem al Sinai, Hashem descended onto the mountain. And B, after the withdrawal, the retreat, the residue, the feeling of holiness that remains. Something special. And three, the ability to infuse holiness into a place of impurity. We use three koiches that the Jewish people have, or that we received from Har Sinai, correspond to three tkufas, three periods in our history. Now here the mystery begins to unravel. The generation that's known as the Dor HaMidbar, the generation of the desert. The Dor HaMidbar. The generation of the desert, even though it's true that the Shekhinah retreated from Har Sinai, it's true. But the whole generation of the Midbar, the whole generation of the desert, that period of time, was a time when the Jewish people experienced massive dosages of elokus, of godliness. We were fed mamish by Hashem's hand. We ate the bread that fell from heaven, the man, and we drank the water from the well of Miriam, and we were surrounded by the embrace of Hashem's cloud. That first period, after the chasna, after the wedding, with Hashem, the first period, the beginning of our life with Hashem as the Jewish people, was a period of extraordinary clarity and revelation, the Dor HaMidbar that experienced godliness directly, which corresponds to the first level of revelation that took place at Sinai. Vayerid Hashem al HaSinai, that the whole generation sensed this clearly, the ones who had seen it, ate bread from heaven. And the second period would be the time that the Jewish people would come to Eretz Yisrael, time that we would enter into the land. Entering into the land corresponds to the second level of revelation, because Eretz Yisrael meant a place where you're going to have to plant and plow and so on, probably not in that order, and you'll have to work the land and be involved and get your hands dirty, and you won't be able to sit all day surrounded by the cloud, and your food will not be sent to you from Shemayim, and you won't drink from the well of Miriam. You'll eat and you'll drink and you'll survive only if you make that hishtadlus, that effort. Nevertheless, even though it's true that in Eretz Yisrael the Jewish people were called upon to live chayim tiviyim, natural lives, lives of this world in the order of nature, everybody knows that Eretz Yisrael is not the same, it's different, there's a residue of holiness that's there, it's an exalted, amazing place. Every single thing about the place is calling a person to be an Eved Hashem. And the Torah itself testifies, Eini Hashem Elokecha Bo Mireishis Hashona V'Adachvi Shona, the eyes of God are upon the land from the beginning of the year to the end of the year. L'mtara Shamayim Tish Damayim, it drinks, it's true you need rain in Eretz Yisrael, but the rain is sent mamish directly from Hashem Yisbarach. It drinks water directly from Shemayim. So Eretz Yisrael corresponds to the second level where there is no longer a clear presence of God in my life. I have to work. I'm not receiving mon. I have to do my thing. But I feel so clearly the Hashgach of Hashem. I feel so much Hashem's presence. In every single step that I take, He was here. He was here. It's like, you know, Hashem... You know, like Lavdil, and you're in a bunk someplace. You went to camp, and you see somebody. You know, if somebody already had written, signed his name on the bunk. You know, 70 years before you or something. Yankala was here. You know, so Kivyochel, the Rebbein Shalom was here. Eretz Yisrael, you feel it, and he's not. Well, he is, but you can't prove it because things are working. Al pidarcha teva. Things are working in the natural order, according to the natural order, but it's a natural order where you sense very clearly the residue of holiness. That's the second level of revelation that took place at Har Sinai. That's the reshim. That's the film that remains after the oil was taken. L'reach shmanech atayv. That's what remains after the oil was taken. That's Eretz Yisrael. So it's a natural order, but it's not quite natural. There's something different. And the third period of Jewish history, which has been going on for quite a while now, is Golus. Golus, Chorb and destruction. David Melch describes it very clearly. Osaseinu lo reinu. Osaseinu lo reinu, we don't see signs of God's presence. We just don't feel, we don't see it. If there's going to be any godliness in your life, you're going to have to really, really work hard to generate it. You have to make a huge Yesu'us de l'sat, an arousal and awakening from below, from this world. Until it's come to a point where there are many, many Jews who have unfortunately strayed away from the path of Torah mitzvahs. So these are the three periods of Jewish history that correspond to the three levels of revelation. And the Baruch Shalom, because he loves the Jewish people, and because he has chosen us from all the nations to be his royal children. So Hashem has sent us three kings. We have many kings, but there are three major tkufis, three major periods of kingship. Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah. He brought us the Torah. Therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu, of course, was entirely miraculous. Everything about him was miraculous. Everything he did was miraculous. He was completely tied. He was tied completely with the miracles of the man, of the be'er, of the well, and of the cloud. Moshe Rabbeinu's malchus was a miraculous malchus. It wasn't required to make any great effort to sense godliness. It was there. Moshe Rabbeinu was shining with Hashem's light. So that's the malchus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Then the Jewish people came to Eretz Yisrael. And the food was no longer coming to us from Shemayim, from heaven, and so on. And we began to undertake lives in this world. And although you know that Shaul HaMelech preceded David HaMelech, everybody also knows that the permanent Malchus belongs to David. And Shaul HaMelech was a caretaker of the Malchus. Could have been maintained on a higher level of Malucha that I'm not going to get into right now. But the Malchus of David HaMelech, that's the true Malchus of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. Right? That's the Malchus. Malchus Beis David, that's the Malchus of the Jewish people in Eretz Yisrael. It's Malchus Beis David. So what's the Malchus of David HaMelech like? And what did David HaMelech come to strengthen us with? What sense of royalty did he give us? David HaMelech came to tell us the following thing. He still tells us every single day, every single time you open up Tehillim, Yidav. David HaMelech tells us the same thing. He says, listen, you can live in a world that appears to be subject to the rules of nature. You can live in a land that seems to be like all other lands. David HaMelech infused within us that sense of Malchus. He strengthened us that belief, that emuna, that every single thing that you have is a gift from Hashem. The whole inyan of David HaMelech is tefillah, which I'll talk about in a few minutes, tefillah. The Malchus of David HaMelech is davening. Davening means I live in this world, but it comes from someplace else. I don't see how. It's not like the man. That's Eretz Yisrael. That's the Malchus of Eretz Yisrael. Eini Hashem Elokecha Bo. Eini Kol Lech Yisabeir V'atan Oislehem Esachlom B'Yitoy. All eyes are turned to Hashem. Not for the man. The man's not falling anymore. But all eyes are turned to Hashem. David HaMelech was the one who was able to take our heads and turn it to Shemayim, even in Eretz Yisrael, and to cause us to feel, to sense the presence of that powerful residue of holiness that is Eretz Yisrael. But the Malchus of David HaMelech is temporarily in a state of disrepair. The Sukkos David has fallen, it's falling. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent into our lives, and I know that not all of you here are firm believers and subscribe necessarily to the way of the Baal Shem Tov, and that's okay. The Baruch Shalom sent into our lives the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. Yiv HaKadosh Mishmayek Hanachis. The HaKadosh Baruch Hu sent into our lives the Baal Shem Tov at a time of the deepest galus, the darkest time. When all hopes had been shattered. It was the time when the Jewish people were enveloped mamish in death and sickness. And many, many, many were straying away from belief. There were certain elite, Rosh Yeshivas, Rabbonim, great people, but the masses of Jews were starving and were dying and couldn't be Jew, they couldn't live as Jews anymore. You couldn't feel royal when even a large part of the official kingdom of the Rosh Hashivas and Rabbanim themselves didn't treat the simple Jews respectfully, love and with care. Or if they did, it was from a distance. Then the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh was sent into this world. And he came, and that's why his Malchus is so extraordinary. The Malchus of the Baal Shem Tov was to give a Jewish person a sense of royalty when you feel that everything has been taken from you. When you're wandering around the world in torn clothing without the advantage that Shlomo Melech had, where he clearly remembered what it was once like being a king. Where we've been in Golis for thousands of years. We don't remember what it's like anymore. Why do Jews read the books and magazines and watch the shows and the films and dress like those who are not royal? Why do they act and behave in such a way? Because they never have forgotten what it means to be B'nai Malach. To be B'nai Malach. To be royal. They don't remember. So the Baal Shem Tov came, and it's like he stood at the top of a mountain, and the Baal Shem Tov screamed out, Yidden Jews, you remember Hashem told us once on a mountain far away, your kingdom of priests, a holy nation. And the Baal Shem Tov taught us how to lift ourselves up, no matter how small you are, no matter how unlearned you are, no matter how poor you are, no matter how many sins you've done in your life. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh came with that message of Malchus. And people wonder, you know, you say, what is the Baal Shem Tov? I mean, we have to do all these, the mitzvahs to do with such hidurim, like the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh. You know, you say, so there are certain customs of Peter Baal Shem, you know, to wear a gartel. When you say, what do you mean? I'm wearing a gartel to separate, I'm wearing a belt to separate between that which is holy and unholy. What do I know from the holiness, not holiness? The Baal Shem Tov said, you know what? Act as a holy person. You're a king. Dress in a noble way. Dress in a royal way. When you dress in a royal way, you act a little, you should try to act differently. It should affect you to act differently. Speak only the Jewish language. Learn only Torah. And more than anything, be besimcha, be good to each other. And treat each other as b'nei malachim. The Baal Shem Tov didn't say anything new, ki yadu. It wasn't anything new. But he was machadish the meluch. He renewed the kingdom of the Jewish people. He renewed the Malchus, our sense of royalty. That no matter where you're living and where the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, where the Torah of the Baal Shem Tov, where the light of the Baal Shem Tov began to shine in the darkest, most disgusting places of the world. In places of insanity. Let's go there. Out of here. I was privileged to visit the Baal Shem Tov's grave last summer. Go and see what surrounds the Baal Shem Tov. What surrounds the Baal Shem Tov? Now it's probably much, much better than it used to be. What surrounds the Baal Shem Tov? And to see how the Jewish people can be royal in a place of such pollution. How we can lift ourselves up above the surroundings. And the Baal Shem Tov reminded every Jewish person that no matter what you've done in your life, no matter what mistakes you've made, you should know that you're a Ben Melech. You're royal, you're special. And you should know that therefore you have to act in a special way, and you should know that you're not restrained by the normal restraints of this world. You're altogether a miraculous being. A Jew is a miraculous being. And therefore, you could always be miskaber. You could always defeat the Yetzer. Even though you've lost to the Yetzer countless times, you're a melech and a melech pirate together vein moiche biyotam. A king can always be victorious. If you remember that you're a king. So therefore, the three kingdoms of Moshe Rabbeinu corresponds to the generation of the desert, to that clarity when Jews have the clarity. Moshe Rabbeinu is the those who are sitting and devoting their lives to Torah. They belong to the Malchus of Moshe Rabbeinu. And they have to be treated in a royal and special way. If they're authentic, I don't mean, God forbid, people as Chalila, not authentic, but authentic B'nai Torah, Jews who belong to the kingdom of Moshe Rabbeinu, who live completely surrounded by godliness and devote their lives to holiness, that's the Malchus of Moshe Rabbeinu, even now. And then there are Jews who belong especially to the Malchus of David HaMelech. These are the big daveners. These are people who don't always have the privilege to sit and learn day and night, who are not necessarily involved in Lachas HaKodesh on a regular basis. They try to chap learning. But the Malchus of David HaMelech, the Malchus of Tefillah, davening, the ability of a Jewish person to come, like the Baal Tanya said, how he envied that Jew who would go to the back of his shop and give a krechs and daven a mincha that would be bakei rikim, that would pierce all the heavens. A krechs that was filled with longing. What does it mean, the Malchus of David Melch? What does it mean, the Malchus of davening? Davening means that even though it looks to the whole world like I'm just a part of nature, I'm a fixture in this world, but I believe that Hashem, even though there's no longer any man, there's no longer any well of Miriam, a cloud, I believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is on a mefarnes, a son of Hashem, sustains and feeds us every single minute, and the bitachon, the trust that David HaMelech had. That's the whole Tehillim I have to go into. It's the malchus of those Jews who could daven, who pour their hearts out in tefillah. And the malchus the Malchus of the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, his Torah, his Moshe Rabbeinu, and Avoda, Tefillah, is David HaMelech, and Gemilas Chasadim, the essence of kindness, of giving, of loving, of caring. Hashleisha Devarim Ha'ilam Oymed, the three things that were all done, three pillars the world stands on, Torah, Moshe Rabbeinu, and Avoda, David HaMelech, Gemilas Chasadim, Baal Shem HaKadosh. But one has to know how to be Gomel Chesed with oneself as well. You have to know how to be kind to yourself also. There are some people that they're able to be kind to others, but they can't be kind to themselves. And I don't mean to indulge in an extra portion of French fries. That's not a big chach. But in the real, really where it counts, to be Gomel Chesed with oneself, which is a concept we find even in Chazal, Kidu, Hillel HaZaki. Even on the simplest level, to be kind to oneself. To see one's own chayin, one's own grace and charm that comes to us in the Baal Shem Tov. So now let's return to the Leviim. And we said that these parashiyas of Nosa in Balaischa, these parashiyas are the parashiyas that are mamish filled with the light of the Leviim. Kachas Leviim. So we find that there are three main families of Leviim, the Torah tells us. Three main families of Leviim. B'nai Kahas, B'nai Gershon, and B'nai Merari. The family of Kahas, Gershon, and Merari. And the Svarim HaKadoshim explain, for those of you that have the Nesiva Shalom, you'll see there it's discussed in a very clear and beautiful way. But it's found in all this far. That these three families of Leviim, who were given three distinct roles in Klai Yisrael, correspond to three types of Jews. And not just three types of Jews, but each one of us goes through three different times, three different kufis, three different periods, because what I was talking about before, there are very few people who live their whole lives just in the Malchus of Moshe, just in the Malchus of Dovra, just in the Malchus of Balsham. Mostly, life is rots of a shayv back and forth, running and retreating from one Malchus, trying to find a place in another Malchus, all within the Malchus of the Jewish people, hopefully. But here we have the three families of Levi. And all Jews are supposed to treat themselves and act as Levi. The Bnei Kohas, Bnei Kohas carried the Aron, the most choshev thing, the Ark, the Menorah. Bnei Kohas were the most exalted. Lo yikas amim means royalty. The word Kohas means royalty. It means awe, trembling, Malchus. Therefore, Kohas is a manifestation of the kingdom of Moshe Rabbeinu, of the generation of the desert, of clarity, of greatness, of Torah, of exaltedness. Roimimus, this Roimimus. So these are the Bali Madrega. These represent, the Bnei Kohas represent the Bali Madrega, the great Jews, the most enlightened, the holiest and the closest, those that are involved with the Melechus HaKadosh Mamash. Then you have the Bnei Gershon. Bnei Gershon already, the Sforim say that Gershon comes from the word Ki Gershuni Hayoy Mistapech Benachlas Hashem. Gershon comes from the word Legaresh, that means to feel that you've been excluded. You feel somewhat of an outcast. Gershuni Hayoy, from the word Gershon, which means separation, divorce. So the Bnei Gershuni La'avoyde Ulamaso, they correspond to that second level of David HaMelech, of Jews who live lives that are not necessarily filled day and night with Torah and with holiness, but they avoid the ulamasa. They have their avoida, they have their closeness, but their ulamasa means they schlep the pekel also. And they're the children of David HaMelech. They're the Levim of that type, of the second Malchus of David HaMelech, who feel like David HaMelech himself felt, as an outcast, as he says himself over and over. Muzar hayisilach, even I was a stranger to my own family. My parents turned me away. David HaMelech, who felt himself not even completely, there was still undercurrents questioning the yichus of David HaMelech. He felt as an outcast, he felt separate, and you could only understand Tehillim, you could only daven with Tehillim if you feel that. But David HaMelech felt as an outcast. Where I was once someplace that's holy and I was taken away. That's the second level. Where there was once the Torah, but it was taken from me and I want it back. That's David HaMelech. Something that I had and I want back. It's the holy need of David HaMelech. It says in the Ishbit Sesvarim that Hashem created worlds and destroyed them. So that the universe is filled, the world is filled with a sense of something having been here that was great and was taken away. That it's woven into the very essence and fabric of creation, a sense of something that was here that's no longer here, and therefore we want it back. That's Bnei Gershuni. That's Tefillah. Bnei Gershon. And the last, that corresponds to the Malchus of David. The last family of the Levim, the Bnei Merari. Everybody who knows a little bit of Hebrew hears in that word right away. The name Merari means Merira's bitterness. The word Morar means bitterness. And the bitterness of the name Merari corresponds to the generation at the end of time, to the generations of Golos, when there's mamish, nothing at all. There's total darkness. And bitterness, the bitterness of trying to get up and put on tefillin when you don't feel like it, of trying to learn a little bit when you Much rather, when you look out the window with envy at other people, where you're trying to behave in the right way and live according to the rules of the Shulchan Aruch and be a good boy, a good girl. There's so many things pulling you, and at least you say to Hashem, at least if my mitzvahs would have a tam, at least if my mitzvahs would be delicious to me, at least if I would have hanor, if I would derive great joy from my lulav from the esri. At least. The B'nai Merari are the most amazing. Because they were the ones that were schlepping the poles, the kroshim. The B'nai Merari, their greatness reveals the purpose of creation. Because what I spoke about at the beginning was that the third aspect of revelation, that Hashem Zibarach's light should be brought into the darkest place. As the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, to lift up mamish, the fallen malchus. That even those who are filled with merirus, with bitterness, that they're not having tasted the joy and the splendor of clarity, and not even to have sensed the residue of Hashem's presence in their lives, and not to have that sense of longing and so on. But the B'nai Merari, who continue schlepping Hashem's pekulah, who continue doing Hashem's will through these last days of darkness, to carry the poles and the beams. That's what it feels like for us nowadays, to try to do a mitzvah. And the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh came over to every child from the family of Merari, to every child of bitterness and frustration. The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh whispers into that person's ear, Mamleches Kehanim V'Goy Kadosh. Mamleches Kehanim. After all these years, you're the only royal one. You're the most royal. You're the most exalted. You're the most beautiful. Melech B'Yoyfiri Terezena Inach. That in Hashem's eyes, our generation, that seems on the outside to be so ugly, is the most appealing. That the B'nai Merari are able to go through that with all the Meriris to still try to be good Jews, it's a hafladikah thing. The Nachas Ruach that it causes, that it brings to Hashem, our lives. We try to say a Marav, try to bench a little bit, to do a mitzvah, try to strengthen our study of Torah, to try to increase our acts of kindness. One of the delicious B'nai Malachim walked in here to the Shia and reminded me of a story that he told on Shavuos, to have your permission to repeat this story. Did you hear it? Is that right? I have to ask the one who told me the story. He told it to me a few months ago, and I was sitting there, but then he reminded me of it. So I hope I say it correctly. I'm assuming that you weren't told to keep this a secret, because you already told 100 people. You know that Jewish life in America wasn't always the way that it is now. It's not even now the way that it is now. But certainly 20, 30, 40 years ago. So between the wars, between World War I and World War II, the great Rosh Hashiva from Kamenetz, Baruch Ber Leibovich, Baruch Ber came to America, I suppose for the purpose of raising money to take care of the yeshiva. And he came to America, and he went to visit Reb Moshe, on the Lower East Side of Moshe Feinstein. And you know that many, many Jews, when they came to America, the turn of the century, many of them abandoned Torah mitzvahs. And it happened that Reb Baruch Ber was walking with Reb Moshe. And all of a sudden, somebody on the street on the Lower East Side called out, Beryl! Beryl! That's what Baruch Ber. But not too many people call him by that name. So, of course, Baruch Ber was exceedingly humble, and he heard Barul, and he turned around. So somebody came over to him, a fellow with his head uncovered, right? His head wasn't covered. He came over to Rav Moshe, he came over to Baruch Ber, and he says, Barul, do you remember me? I'm so-and-so. What was his name? I don't remember. Sarah Bianco, I don't know. From the cheder that we learned together, right, before that we learned together, we were children. So Baruch Ber says, sure, yeah, how you doing? I remember you, sure. And, you know, they gave each other a hug. And Baruch Ber saw that he didn't have even a yarmulke on. So he asked him, what's your matzav? What's your situation? So you know how it is when the Jews ask that question. You know, usually you think it means parnasa. I mean, that's like the, should I tell like the joke about the guy? All right. I have to, you know, there's a guy that's in a, you'll excuse me for a minute just with this, there's a guy that's in a terrible accident. This is an old comedian told this. A guy that's in an accident, and an Alta Yid gets into a terrible accident, and they put him into the ambulance, and they don't know if he's going to live or die. And the fellow leans over in the ambulance and says to the Jew, he says, Mr. Cohen, are you comfortable? He says, Baruch Hashem, I make a living, you know. That's a certain mindset that we have. It's been going on like that for a long time. Soon that's going to end. We'll have all we need. We won't have to worry about it. Are you comfortable? It means, are you comfortable in the Pshat and Rabbi Kiva? Are you comfortable? So Baruch Ber said, what's your situation? So he said, Baruch Hashem, I'm making a living. So Baruch Ber said, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about Yiddishkeit. What's your matzav? What are you holding in Yiddishkeit? So the man told Baruch Ber, he said, you know, Beryl, it's not easy here in America to keep Shabbos. But you know how it was in those days, that if you tried to keep Shabbos, then you would lose your job? Maybe you could manage for a week or two to get away with it, but then you would lose your job. And those Jews who kept Shabbos under those circumstances, those B'nai Merari, they have Gevaldige children and grandchildren. So this Jew told Rav Baruch Ber that, he says, Baruch, you can't imagine how every Friday, you can't imagine the temptation to go out and to work on Shabbos. So you know what I do? There's a special lock that I have, and I guess he would lock it, and he probably would give the key to his wife to hide or something. He would lock his door. He said that every single week, every single Friday, from candlelighting until Havdalah, I lock myself in my apartment so that I shouldn't be drawn out to the street of Michal Shabbos. So when Baruch Ber heard that, so Baruch Ber was a very strong person. When Baruch Ber heard that, he started to scream mamish out loud in the street there on the Lower East Side. He started to scream, do you hear that? That his lock, this lock is saying every single second of Shabbos, the lock is screaming out, Hashem Hu Elokim, Hashem Hu Elokim. Every single second of Shabbos, that lock is calling out, God is one. There's a God in heaven. It's a gewaldige story. And that's how it is with us, our days of merirus, of bitterness, to the B'nai Merari. When we try to do a mitzvah, when you try to dress a certain way and to act a certain way, it's screaming mamish to all the universes, Hashem will look in. When you try to learn a little bit, you try to do a mitzvah, you try to do a ma'aseh of chesed, it's a screaming mamish in all the elements, Hashem will look in. It's the greatest testimony that there's a God in heaven. If after all these years of schlepping, we're still here, and we're still saying creation, we're still keeping mitzvahs, Hashem Elokim. We should be zoche for that time that we won't have to hear locks and bolts screaming out Hashem Elokim. We should be zoche for that time when all of the kingdoms will be brought together, because of course that's the tachlis. Where Moshe Rabbeinu, the letters of Mashiach, with Mashiach, Tzikenu, David Malka Mashiach, the Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh, all the tzaddikim, that all the malchias, the three families, the three levels of revelation should be all brought and made into one. We should be zoichim et Hashem to see the beauty of the King with our own eyes and to see the coming of Mashiach.